Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we explore the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. In this episode of the Politics Weekly, we give an appraisal of what's been happening in the metros in Gauteng, being the metros of Joburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni, which are caught up in coalition government infighting. In Joburg, both the former speaker and the mayor have been casualties, while in Ekurhuleni, a motion of no confidence has been tabled by the ANC against the current mayor there. Tshwane seems to be headed for the same fate. We'll also be looking at the latest in the ANC's leadership race, which is going to culminate in December at their national conference. Our guests for this conversation are Sibongile Nkeshoba, who's the Sunday Times politics editor, as well as Mawanda Mashabalala, who's the Sunday Times politics writer.
With immediate effect.
When people zone.
And I quote, in 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding. Unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order. The ruling party by point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
So the ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday?
Well, sabotage, that can be
this
determined.
Is not a shape.
Arms, can you please come in?
Welcome to the both of you, gentlemen.
Mike.
Now, Mawanda, shall we start with you? You have been following developments in the three metros in Gauteng. Are we looking at the same problem, or are we looking at different problems in the three metros of Joburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane?
Well, I would say probably we're looking at the same, and not the same, Ramak. The same in the sense that these metros were all about a month ago in the control of the DA until recently when they lost Joburg. So that is the common factor. That is the same element in it. Obviously, when it comes to the actual problems, which I don't think these things are mainly about service delivery, it might vary from municipality to municipality. Also, the dynamics in terms of who has how many seats may also vary, be different. But the fact is that it's a move to unseat DA-led coalitions. Having succeeded in Joburg, now there's more confidence that it might succeed in the further other municipalities. So those are the same issues in that it's a DA. The move is by the ANC working with other partners to dismantle DA and its own partners who are just disintegrating as things are.
So what is in dispute here? Well, I hear you saying that is the ANC driving the effort to get rid of the DA administrations in the three metros. But what is the issue?
Yes. Look, Brahma, I do think that the ANC is taking advantage of DA's own self-inflicted injuries, so to speak, because there's been a growing sentiment within these DA-led coalition partnerships, as they call them, from the smaller partners in these partnerships that are constantly complaining about what they term as arrogance of the DA, which wants everything, doesn't want to listen to its partners. Allegation is that it behaves as though it won with an outright majority. I mean, we've seen it with PA. And now I saw, just before we came here today, I saw the leader of the Freedom Front Plus also saying the same, that this arrogance of the DA, it looks like they are not learning from it. They continue treating small parties that help them to power as if they are non-entities. So I think as that noise grew of these smaller parties in these partnerships complaining about DA conduct, the ANC saw a gap wherein they are moving in now and trying to promise them better treatment. We'll treat you with respect. We'll listen to you in the coalition partnership. We'll give you seats within the coalition partnership, powerful seats. Because the other issue, for instance, the DA controls when it has the mayor, it also wants the speaker. You know, for instance, it is said in Joburg that IFP had wanted the position of Speaker. But within the DA itself, there were no agreements about that. There were forces that were saying, no, no, they don't deserve it. Others were saying, yes. So it's those kind of issues that gave rise to these problems that we are seeing. And the ANC is just taking full advantage and saying, well, you are unhappy with the DA. Come to us. What do you want? We'll give it to you. So that's why we find ourselves where we are in the nutshell, Bramai.
Just two questions. The one is, it is for the first time I hear that there's such a political term as arrogance. That is actually a valid, because it's been like bandied about, you know. the DA's arrogance, you know. Mawande talks about the positions. Why are the positions significant? Why are they so important?
Yeah, so, but Mike, it tells you that the residents of these metros are going to be the casualties of these developments, because no one is saying that whoever is in charge right now, they are not putting a case of people failing on their mandates. They're not putting a case of people failing to deliver on their promises or failing to deliver services to residents. The main points that they're putting across is the arrogance of the DA and the positions that the DA is refusing to give to these political parties. It's all about access to resources, Bramike. Because if you are an IFP and you are participating in the partnership and you don't have an influential position, it means that I'm not saying that the IFP does not have those positions, but I'm just making an example that if you've got an IFP that is participating in those partnerships and don't have access to those resources, then the person who's hogging all the positions is displaying some kind of arrogance, and they're blocking your leaders from having for occupying those positions, because those positions grant them access to resources, access to patronage, and all those things. So if the DA is hogging all the positions, that means that the DA controls the resources. The DA gets to appoint its own people, not just politicians, but also officials in those metros. So we are seeing a fight which is mainly around resources from these political parties. It has nothing to do with the residents who voted them to power. It's not because the mayor of Fekurulani failed to deliver on a mandate or that she had promised before she took office. It's all about that the DA is being arrogant and wants to occupy all the positions and therefore are blocking all the other partners from accessing those positions and ultimately the resources.
Mawande is touching on the issue of mandates and whether the people who are being removed or who are being threatened with removal are being put under pressure because of a failure to deliver on a mandate. These coalitions, do they have a set of agreed deliverables, which are which presumably would be the basis of a coalition, or is it just like Sobona Pambili kind of thing? Get together, your priorities to get rid of an incumbent, and then you'll see how it unfolds.
I think that is a very important question, Bramak, and I think that is exactly where that is the genesis of the problem, in that there is these things. First of all, they are not formalized, they are not legislated, but the bigger point is that even when they are signed, you don't even know what is it that is signed. It's signed that, okay, we'll vote with you in whatever you put before council, but there is no deliverables, as you say, or to say, okay, guys, we are entering into this partnership. It's for 5 years, for the whole term. In this term, these are the short-term goals, medium-term goals, long-term goals, and then where it could be reviewed on the basis of failure to deliver those. There is no such a thing. And I think it's a bigger problem for the country in that there is no legislation. I agree with Helen Zille on this point, because what they are arguing as the DA is that as long as there is no legislation that formalizes where you are legally bound to have these deliverables, to stick to agreements, to say, of course, I mean, there should be a recall clause to say, if you are not delivering, we should get you out. But they should be formalized in such that you can't just wake up and say, oh, well, this one is giving half a bread, but I can get a loaf there. Actually, why don't I move to that side? But for me, being the politicians of this particular political party, so I think that is where the problem starts. There is no such agreement, which is why, as Shoba is saying, that the citizens or the residents are nowhere to be found in terms of all these fights that are ongoing. It's all about the particular leaders of the various political parties and what they draw from these things. So I think the bigger point is the legislation in the future to formalize these things and make sure sort of there's some sort of control. I mean, for instance, like I'm sure in the National Assembly, for instance, I'll use a silly example of being an MP, there's requirements, there's laws, you must make a list of your party first. You can't just come, there are rules that are followed. They go to lists. If this one gets out, who was next in the list? You can't just go and take anyone from the township street. So something like that, where there are rules that these things are done in a particular way, not just people congregating in a small boardroom and say, okay, give me this position, give me that contract, give me that entity of the city, and then I'll vote with you, whatever you do. So the person who is the leading party in a coalition can literally do illegal things as long as they delivered on what they promised first, which are positions and some control for the other partners in the municipality. So even if they take budgets to the wrong things, as long as you agreed at first that you're going to vote for them, you just continue voting, and it has nothing to do with the residents of the city. That's the problem.
Smog, I don't know. I have a slight difficulty here. Mawande says that there's a view that the coalitions must be legislated. I thought that coalitions are meant to be completely voluntary, A, and B, that they would assume that the leaders have the maturity to place the greater good above, you know, all the things that we are seeing unfold in the affected metros. Would legislation resolve this thing?
I doubt legislation would resolve this. But I think there is an attempt by our legislators to sort of find sort of a model to follow. They recently traveled to Denmark, and they spoke to the Danish politicians there about how they are doing things, because there they have stable coalitions that they form based on certain programs. And I think that our democracy is still young, Pramike. The Danes have been doing it for a while, and ours is still very young. And our main problem is that we have political parties who enter into coalitions, but they differ on ideology, they differ on what should be the priorities when you get into a coalition. I think if we were in a normal society with a mature democracy, I think would be better place to put together coalitions that would be stable, because maybe at that time when we reach that stage, people will be able to say, although we differ on this ideology, but we agree on this project or this program, and agree that what matters in Johannesburg is water and electricity, and that's what we should focus on. But what you find with these coalitions is that, for instance, a PA enter into in coalition with the DA. They are from opposing views, and there is no way that their coalition is going to be stable, because they are going to disagree along the lines. The DA has its own priorities, and the PA, the EFF, have their own priorities. So I think that's where we are. So legislation alone won't help us resolve this problem. I think there also have to be political will. Parties need to be able to be mature enough to sit down and draw these programs and say, these are our priorities, and this is how we are going to run this government during this term going forward. And this is what is lacking in all these coalitions that we have right now.
Mm. Now, the coalitions have been put forward as like the great new future for South African politics, you know, especially, you know, from, you know, in the light of the ANC's long dominance, you know, of governance in South Africa, whether it's at provincial or national level, you know. So some people have said, yeah, actually, this is the beginning of a new fate, maybe better even phase of governance in South Africa, and that the future of democracy in South Africa lies in coalitions, and presumably life will be better for everyone once we have coalitions and the ANC has been weakened or marginalized. Are you seeing anything in what has happened so far that can make us hopeful?
There's nothing to be hopeful about, Pramak.
Keeping in mind 2024.
True. No. There's nothing to be hopeful about, Pramak, from where I'm standing. And we are lucky in that now we almost have about 10 years of experience of coalitions, because remember 2016, that's where it all started, at that level of a bigger government in the form of a metropolitan city. I mean, it's been a downhill from there. Look at all these cities that started in 2016 being coalitions. Nelson Mandela Bay, Tshwane, Johannesburg. Ekurhuleni is an exception, because between 2016 and 2021, it was the only functional coalition. Even there, because the ANC didn't need that many partners in Ekurhuleni, they just needed AIC. So it was a coalition of two people. Very easy to agree that it was not this mixed masala that we are seeing now. But with the track record that we've seen in the main with these coalitions in these cities, Pramak, I don't think so. I shudder to imagine a picture of how it would look like at provincial and national government where we would go there in 2024, as is predicted by those that predict these things. I think that will be a race, and a very fast one, to the bottom. For instance, Pramak, make an example. We are saying at a city level, which has very few position, few entities, the fight is about who deploys who and so. Already we hear, for instance, here in Johannesburg, ANC barely a month after they took power, they are already cleaning up these entities, Johannesburg Property Company, Johannesburg Market, all these entities, putting in new boards, putting in new CEOs. Imagine that thing at a national level where there's DGs, DDGs, director, manager, senior manager, in such a situation where every 9 months a government changes. Do you think anything will ever get done in the country? I don't think so. So I do think that at some point, maybe voters themselves, but unfortunately we vote as individuals, so we can never discuss these things in a group and say, no, guys, okay, it's fine, we're not happy with the ANC, but let's vote for so-and-so. But for me, I think in the bigger scheme of things, choosing one party and giving it 5 years, if it messes up, changing, for me, that is a much more workable system than what we are currently in, this thing of different interests, different ideologies, different personal egos and all these things. I think it's a disastrous form of government, especially as Shoba was saying, in an immature and fledging democracy like ours. Maybe if we're at the level of these European countries, we'd be talking a different story. But I don't think we are ready. We're not there. The municipalities were a pilot, and the pilot was a big flop. So elevating that to national level, I think...
So what does that leave us with if the pilot fails and everyone says, no, you don't want a one-party dominant kind of system? So it means that the experimentation will have to continue in some form.
Well, yeah, Pramak. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think it's a good idea. For me, personally, I mean, as I say, looking at this experience, I don't think that's where we want to be.
Maybe it's too soon.
I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon. And by so doing, I'm not in any way suggesting that the ANC
must rule forever.
No, as I say, I don't care who rules, but I just believe, Pramak, at this point in time, we are better off with one party governing with an outright majority. Could be anyone. Could be DA, EFF, ANC, or whoever, PA, whatever.
I'm intrigued by the role of Action SA in what has been happening in the current infighting. You know, I remember distinctly Herman Mashaba, you know, in the beginning when he started Action SA, one of the critical what seemed to be like a non-negotiable for him was that he would never work with the ANC. He called them all kinds of names, you know, that they are crooks, they are thieves, they've stolen money, and he will never, they must be in jail, and all of that kind of thing. It seems to me that there are the makings of a shift in Action SA's position, or are we all imagining it?
Maybe not to give away what we were working on, Pramak, but it seems as if the arrogance of the DA may actually lead to some kind of shift in the political landscape. The Action SA is not taking a definite decision. But what they're saying is that they are re-looking at their role in these coalitions and their approach. And in doing so, they are talking to everyone, which includes the ANC. And if that were to happen, Bramaik, if Action SA tomorrow was to decide to work with the ANC, that will be a major shift in our politics, and the biggest winner will be the ANC in a sense that even if the ANC does not occupy all these municipalities or take the mayorship of all these municipalities, but it will be proof enough for the ANC to go out during the elections for 2024 elections and say, these people have failed. Why do you still want to vote for them? They have failed. They have not been able to govern. They are fighting amongst themselves. Let's go back to stability. Let's go back to normalcy, where you have a party that is able to develop a manifesto, develop a program for the term, and implement it, pass budget by itself without going and begging for other votes. And I think from this whole mess, the biggest winner is going to be the ANC, and the ANC will, as Mawandi is saying, they've already started. They are making moves, they are removing people, they are placing their people. It means they have access to resources that they will need in the run-up to the elections in 2024, and they might emerge stronger than we think because of that access to resources, because of a weakened opposition that is fighting amongst themselves, and the ANC can present themselves as the answer to the chaos that is currently taking place right now, which I don't think is good for a democracy.
Just to change tech slightly and go national. The ANC leadership race, we left with just over 2 months or so before the conference happens. Has there been clarity as to who are the front runners, if you like, and in what positions? I presume it's not all positions which are being heavily contested.
I think this time around, Bramaik, all positions are being contested. It is going to be a very interesting conference. And I think as the nominations come in, it's becoming clearer as days go past that for certain positions, we do have a contest. For example, for the position of president, it seems as if President Ramaphosa and President Zweli Mkhize appear to be the two. I said President Zweli Mkhize.
You know what? In South African politics, truth is often stranger than fiction. You know? So anything is possible.
For
before Jacob Zuma became president, and when he was having his legal troubles, people would laugh, says President Zuma, and say, you're dreaming.
Yeah.
Never going to happen here. So you never know.
It seems as if the two, President Ramaphosa and former minister Zweli Mkhize, are the front runners. Although the Minister of Cooperative Governance and International Affairs, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, is also getting a nomination. So for that position, it's becoming clear that the president might be contested, and the contest might come from either Dr. Mkhize or Dr. Dlamini-Zuma. And for the position of deputy president, there are so many people who are challenging for this position. I think at some time there were about six people, or seven who had raised their hands. But as we move closer, as we get the nominations, it seems as if Paul Mashatile may be the front runner, but there are other people who are also being nominated. The Minister of Water Affairs, for example, is one of the people who has been nominated. Senzo Mchunu, Mamoluko Kubai, the Minister of Human Settlements, and the Minister of Justice, Ronald Lamula, is also getting nominations, as also the incumbent Deputy President, Mr. David Mabuza, is also getting nominations. I've heard of nominations that he has received in Mpumalanga and other provinces. So for that position, you are likely to have more than two candidates who are contesting for that position as well. And then the other position, which is a position that is very important, the point of Secretary General. Secretary General is important primarily because that's the person who runs the organization on a day-to-day basis. That is like your CEO of the organization. Mm. There's also a strong contest there with the former premier of Eastern Cape being nominated by the grouping that supports Zweli Mkhize. It's Phumulo Masualle, the former premier of the Eastern Cape, and as well as the former Secretary General, the former provincial secretary of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, Mdumisani Ntuli. Also, the Minister of Transport, Fikile Mbalula, is also eyeing that position. There is also the General Manager of Luthuli House, Phoebe Potgieter, who's also getting some nominations we pick up for that position as well. And as well, the position that's being held currently by Gwede Mantashe is also receiving a strong challenge from the Premier of Limpopo, Stan Matabata. There's also the Deputy Minister of Finance, David Masondo, who's also eyeing that position. So, Pramike, we can expect this to be a hotly contested national conference, even though there was an attempt much earlier in the year to sort of prevent these contests, and especially the position of president. There was a strong move to sort of prevent contest on the position of president, but it seems as if ANC branches have other ideas and they are nominating their own candidates. And but so far we are going to have a contest there, Pramike, although it's not clear of who is not going to make the cut, who might be. Because if you don't make the threshold, your name can't go on the ballot. So if there's someone who does not get a certain number of nominations, they will not be able to make it to the ballot, and they will need about 25% of conference in order for their name to be nominated from the floor. So yeah, that's where we are for now. We know that there is a lot of horse trading that is currently taking place. Mm. There are different factions talking to one another about possibly working together, forming one slate. We know that the slate that supports Nkosi Dlamini Zuma has had meetings with the slate that supports Tourism Minister Lindiwe Sisulu, and Mr. Mkhize has also, Dr. Mkhize has also had some engagement with some of those candidates. So yeah, it's still early days, but things are shaping up, and by November we should have a clear picture of where this battle is going.
Mm. You know, there was a time where in the initial stages, even before the nomination started, you know, where the ANC was seen, for outsiders looking in, would see two sides in the ANC. They would see the CR17, or you know, that crowd that supported Cyril Ramaphosa, and the Ariti. Is the state of play still like that, or has it become murkier as we're going closer to December?
It's chaos, Bramak. Even Makia doesn't describe it. It's chaos. You see, I think the problem was that initially, even from the beginning, President Cyril Ramaphosa was not a leader of ANC who had a stranglehold on a particular grouping or a particular province. For example, Jacob Zuma, when he came up, we knew that he was a KwaZulu-Natal strongman and they had that province support since 2007. But with the current president, the way he came into becoming deputy president was that a certain grouping within the ANC fetched him from his farm, I hope not Palapala, and then put him there. And then the people who then supported him to then ascend to the highest position were mainly people who did not want someone who's anointed by Zuma to take over. So those were people who elected him because they thought he was a better candidate because he was already deputy president. And then you are seeing that as we move closer to December, that President Ramaphosa does not have a strong clique that is saying we are President Ramaphosa's people. You do have a couple of ministers there and there who meet, but he's supported by provinces who also have other views when it comes to other positions. So it's not as if Ramaphosa comes with this bloc that says we are saying we support president, and we support this one for deputy president. We support. He's supported by people who have different views. That's why we have people in the Eastern Cape who want Oscar Mabuyane to be deputy president. That's why in Mpumalanga, we have people who want Lamula to be deputy president, and they all support the president. So that is why then the lines are blurry. These factions or campaigns are not as straightforward as 2007 or 2012. Within the other grouping, Bramike, it's more confusing because they are. We thought that the RET forces had the candidate in 2017, and then when it comes to these elections, we sort of expected the RET forces to come as a bloc. But even them, they are so divided. And someone was saying, in fact, the RET forces no longer exist. You just have groupings who are just opposed to Cyril Ramaphosa, who are just pushing in different directions, and who have got their own candidates and preferences. And that is why you don't see a coherent a campaign that is supporting one particular individual. That's why I have so many candidates for all these positions, because it is not as black and white as it was in 2007 and as it was in 2012.
Mawande, you know, as a lay person, I would have thought that a president, especially given the problems that he's had, Cyril Ramaphosa, that he would be front and center and out there, you know, selling himself or stating what he stands for, that kind of thing. He seems to be very quiet for someone who presumably is wanting to be re-elected. Is he assuming that, you know, there's a time where it was assumed that he's, you know, the thing is cut and dried, that he's assured his position is unassailable. But clearly, it may not be. But he seems to be not bothered. Or am I misreading him?
Well, publicly so, Bramaki is not bothered. And probably the reason is exactly what Shobo was talking about. Because there are so many interests that all converge on him. Because once he goes out there aggressively and campaigns as he did, for instance, in the lead up to Nazareth 2017, he will have to make some choices in terms of talking about the team that he wants to lead with. And by doing that, at this point in time, he may actually isolate. For instance, the typical example of deputy president, Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga, let's take them as an example. When he goes out there and campaigns, who does he say is his let's even add Paul Mashatile, who does he say is his candidate for deputy president? Because say he says Paul, says so publicly, Oscar Mabuyane in the Eastern Cape is like, okay, I'm taking my numbers, let me go negotiate with someone else who's more prepared to listen to me. Lamula in Mpumalanga, okay, I'm gone with my numbers. So the mercy or the chaos of the situation itself, it sort of forces his hand to be not too actively involved in campaigning or out and out by showing his hand, but rather work in the background, even if he manages all these differences that are there, manage them from a background perspective, in that when you fail, it's not so obvious to the people out there that you are actually trying to panel beat the whole situation. So I think the mess of the situation in its broader sense has forced his campaign to be the way it is, and also issues of CR17 files might have caused problems for him, because remember, there was the highly funded campaign in 2017, which thought it's operating in an honest space, everything was recorded, only for those things to backfire. This time around, because you've learned that you can't do that because it may create problems for you, but you are also a sitting president, you also can't do other shady things because they have a way of backfiring. You know, you have Parapara following you, which also involves issues like money, hard cash. So all those things are sort of forcing his hand. He sort of finds himself in a very tight corner, because if he moves, how does he move? How does he fund this campaign? Who does he give monies to campaign together with him? So I think all those previous problems have actually put him in the place that he finds himself in, and he has no choice but to keep it this way. It may backfire, and I think it's just a matter of trusting God now to deliver.
It sounds like paralysis to me. But just as we wrap up, you know, let's crystal ball a little bit. The individuals, Paul Mashatile, Mwangonke mentioned him as a candidate for deputy president. Could he become president?
surely, Brahman. If he wins that one, given you can see the man moves in a very, you know, calculated precision sort of a thing. I mean, also if you track down his career, his rise to the control of Gauteng, to the NEC, how critical and strategic he was in the whole move to remove then President Zuma after the Nazareth Conference. Remember, he was the face of that campaign. The guts that he has shown before in times of crisis. For instance, I remember during one of the votes, I think the Nkandla vote, he was still an MP when he was Minister of Arts and Culture. He if I remember right, he and Mondli were the only one who came out publicly and said, I'm not going to vote for this man. So those kind of things, they show him as a leader of conviction, leave the fact that conviction for the good or for the bad. But that character that he has built for himself, I think it shows that many people may have confidence in such a person to elevate to the highest position, especially given the not so glorious way that the current president has covered himself in terms of being firm and decisive, be it in times of crisis or be it in times of chaos or be it in times of good. He's just a president who can't make decisions. And I think Paul is the opposite of that. He's a guy who can be trusted to make decisions and move forward. So
even though he doesn't smile as often.
Yeah, no, definitely, because he's serious, he's in charge.
He's very close to his,
you know, chest. So a guy like that, Brahman, I think in actual fact, he is going to be a very problematic deputy for the current president if the two of them win together.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. Between now and December, anything can happen to the president in terms of what they, for argument's sake, the NPA decides to do. So he could be out of the race before December.
True.
Couldn't he?
True. No, he can be. I mean, it all depends in the NPA as it relates to issues of Palapala and stuff which are under investigation. So that would be the most dramatic way of this conference. And I mean, I think then it would be...
And Paul Mashatile would be in pole position, presumably?
Presumably, I think so, Brahmak. I think it would actually collapse all this chaos that we see. But I'm not saying that's what I'm wishing for. I know how it sounds like.
Lastly, the other character, Zweli Mkhize, could, assuming Cyril Ramaphosa does become president, is elected president, could he end up with Deputy President Zweli Mkhize?
It's unlikely for now, Brahmak, because... Last time I checked, the Mkhize faction and the Ramaphosa faction, none of them had reached out to each other. There had not been any such discussions. The only way that Zweli Mkhize can become President Ramaphosa's deputy is in an instance where, let's say, Paul Mashatile withdraws from the race, or in an instance where the three of them sit down and say, let's avoid this contest that is taking place right now to unite the ANC. Zweli Mkhize says, I'm not going to contest for the position of president. And then the president retains his position, and then Zweli Mkhize becomes his deputy, which I think, given the current climate and the tensions within the factions, it seems unlikely for now. But in the ANC, the ANC of the old, that's how disputes were settled. There were arranged outcomes in conferences. And I think if the ANC were to come together and say, if we are serious about this unity that we are talking about, let's have a sit down and say there will be no contest, as other factions were suggesting earlier on in the year, that let's have a sit down, let's not have this bruising contest that will result in more divisions and we go to the elections even more divided. That is in that instance where the president may likely have Zweli Mkhize as his deputy. But as things stand for now, Brahmak, prepare yourself for a bruising battle in December.
Okay, gentlemen, that's all the time we have for our conversation on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. We'll wrap it up there. Hopefully you will join us again in the not too distant future to give us an update, because it looks like things are happening very fast, you know, and everything needs interpretation, you know. Things are not quite what they seem often. Thank you very much for joining us. Those were our guests for today's conversation. Sibongiwonke Shoba, who's the Sunday Times Politics editor, as well as Mawanda Mashabalala, who's the Sunday Times Politics writer. We appreciate your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.